Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. 17 communities in Massachusetts are now considered high risk for coronavirus infections. Six cities and towns were newly added to the list this week. We've got Worcester, Nantucket, Tingsboro, Plainville, Wrentham, and Saugus. Now, high-risk communities have more than 8 cases for every 100,000 people over a 2-week period. And so we want to start today by looking at what's happening to drive up the risk assessment in some communities around the Commonwealth. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by officials from Worcester and Saugus, but let's start with a medical perspective. Joining us now is Dr. Shira Durone. She's an infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Welcome back, Dr. Durone.
Great to be back.
And listeners, we welcome your calls. What questions do you have about spread in your community? What do you want and need from city leadership to feel confident that the coronavirus can be contained there? Do you have information and resources that you need to keep your community safe? You can call us, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So Dr. Durone, 17 communities in Massachusetts are now designated at high risk, 6 new ones. I guess I'm wondering how worrying that is or is not. Does that worry you?
Well, it's my job to be worried. Yeah, I mean, I love to see numbers go down, not up. And, you know, we have been preparing as if there will be a second surge since really the midst of the first surge. And so we're ready for it. But, you know, of course, we've been hoping that it won't happen.
Yeah, so we have been hearing for a while about the possibility of a surge in the fall. Do you think this is the tip of that iceberg, or is it too soon to say?
You know, I was kind of expecting that with cold weather, we might see rising cases. And, you know, the weather's been a little bit colder, but, you know, this is kind of earlier than I might have thought because we have had so many nice days. You know, I thought that we've been enjoying our outdoor dining, we've been enjoying our outdoor exercise and our outdoor small gatherings, and that it would be really hard to give that up and that we might, you know, people might just bring those things indoors and that might lead to more transmission. You know, I don't know if that's happening. I feel like the weather's still been pretty good.
So what do you think might be causing it? I mean, some communities have been sustained in this high-risk zone, like Chelsea or Lawrence. Right. And then we're also hearing some reports of communities winding up with one-off reports of events that cause spikes. What do you think's going on here?
Well, when your numbers are really low, one event can really, you know, make the numbers change quite a bit, right? So, you know, we know that there is a nursing home outbreak in Wrentham. And, you know, that alone could almost be the cause of that, you know, apparent spike. You know, we're here in Massachusetts, we're lucky because when we talk spike, we're not talking about spikes of the size that are being seen in other states.
So the number 8 out of 100,000, so more than 8 out of 100,000 for a 2-week period, makes you a high-risk community. To the casual observer, that feels kind of random. What is the import of that number?
Well, it is to some extent random. It is to some extent an arbitrary number. And it's, you know, even those numbers are so much better than what we were seeing in March and April. But it's a trigger. It's a threshold that we need to take seriously. It's a threshold for raising, you know, sounding the alarm bells and making sure that everybody is taking note and making sure their behaviors are what they should be.
So a couple of weeks ago, there were 8 communities on the high-risk list. Now there are 17. A couple have come and gone off that list. It kind of begs the question whether we're going to play whack-a-mole as a state until there's a vaccine or major breakthrough. Are we just going to see this kind of up and down and up and down? Or is there a way to really keep a sustained suppression of high-risk?
Well, we might. We might play that whack-a-mole game that you describe, and because, you know, we are, for the most part, doing such a good job doing the things that we know work, the distancing, the masking, the hand hygiene, the surface disinfection, the staying home when sick. But we might also be getting lax, and maybe some of this will kind of whip us into shape and teach us a lesson, and, you know, maybe with a little of this, you know, fear factor, we might do better over time. It's just really hard to say.
So, Dr. Durone, I know you're going to stay with us through the rest of this discussion. Thank you for that. And listeners, call in with your questions, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What do you want to know from Dr. Durone, from administrators in Worcester and Saugus about community spread, about safety measures people can take, about why we're seeing increases in changes? Again, call and we will try to answer your questions. You can be a part of this conversation. So let's add another voice here. We're going to head west to Worcester, where Dr. Michael Hirsch, the medical director of the city's Department of Public Health, joins us on the line. Welcome, Dr. Hirsch. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So Worcester has reported 6,130 total cases, with 255 of those in the last 2 weeks. And city officials report three consecutive weeks of increases in positive cases. What do you think is going on there, Dr. Hirsch?
Well, I think like your previous discussion with Dr. Durone has indicated, it's multifactorial. We are lucky in Worcester that we have 11 institutions of higher learning here, and about 9 of them have decided to come back in a physical way. 3 are still kind of all dealing with all virtual education, but that was an infusion of another 20,000 people into our previous population of about 187,000 people, and some of them came from high-risk states. Now, I think that the colleges have done a terrific job. They've coordinated with my department to kind of come up with a testing schema, and we have a reporting system, and the colleges have their own contact tracing systems that jives with ours. But at the same time, you can only do so much to patrol young people's activities after hours and on weekends. And there have been some outbreaks in several of the colleges that, are likely sources of more than just the folks that we see reporting in the colleges, because these are the young people that then go and do their shopping. They go and frequent, restaurants and bars, and that's where they can cause a spread beyond the college environment.
So, Dr. Hirsch, are you saying that you believe that the reason that Worcester is now in the high-risk zone is because of colleges that have returned students to campus?
I think it's definitely a factor, because that's where we've seen some of the bigger clusters in the last 3 weeks. We also have seen clusters in families, and this would kind of go along with what Dr. Durone was talking about, that sense of laxity that I think there have been weekend and kind of summer gatherings where larger than your nuclear family have gotten together, and the spacing and the distancing and the masking and the hand washing probably wasn't as vigorous as we would have liked. And we've also seen some outbreaks in retail stores and in factory settings, where essential workers have gotten people in their immediate area in the factory or in the big box stores sick, or at least COVID positive, and then they sometimes carpool together. There's a lot of tentacles there that can spread out. So
Dr. Hirsch, today the city, let me just ask you quickly, today the city manager, Edward Augustus Jr., talked about general fatigue related to wearing masks and social distancing as a cause. Do you think that that is a piece of this picture too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's a lot of fatigue, and unfortunately there's also some politicization of the wearing of a mask, and I just before I got on the phone with you, I was on the phone with a woman who at a local grocery store said there was a man wandering around without a mask, and several people approached him and told him to wear one, and he didn't respond very nicely. So there are some of these incidents that are going on behind the scene as well. So we're trying to drill down on this. It's not as easy as just simply the contact tracers will, get the telephone numbers of everybody that the person was in contact with and give them instructions about getting tested and this and that. But many times the people are writing down like where they live, not necessarily where they're hanging out or where they're working. So there's a lot of work that we're hoping we will get help with, that now that we're a red zone, the state is going to come in and give us some aid. And we're going to have a meeting about that tomorrow at 10 o'clock with Governor Baker's team to see how they can help us maybe knock things down back to where we were in the yellow and even for a little while in the white.
So Dr. Hirsch, stay with us, please. I'm going to bring Saugus in a minute, but quickly, Dr. Durone, a lot of what I'm hearing from Dr. Hirsch there is people just not cooperating with the standards that we know work. What else can we do?
Well, you know, there's a movement, I guess I'll call it, of scientists that believe that low-cost, rapid at-home testing is the solution, and we can talk about that more if you like, but, you know, it's got some logistical challenges, but it's also got some promise as a potential different way to approach it.
So, listeners, what needs to happen in your community to keep your community low risk? Are your neighbors complying with mask wearing, with the appropriate social distancing? Are you worried about community spread and this kind of COVID fatigue that we're seeing that has people maybe relaxing too much or loosening their vigilance? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Shira Durone and Dr. Michael Hirsch are staying with us. I want to bring one more voice in here. We've got Scott Crabtree, town manager of Saugus. Saugus also was just added to the high-risk list for coronavirus. Welcome to Radio Boston, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
Scott, what was your reaction to finding Saugus now literally in the red? 36 cases in the last 2 weeks, 690 cases total.
So what we're doing in Saugus is trying to focus on really more awareness and combating some of this COVID-19 fatigue. And we're using the red as helping to bring more awareness and sort of bring it back into the forefront so that people understand this is serious. We're all in desperate need of a vaccine or some sort of treatment for this. And until we're able to have that, we just have to follow those guidelines by the CDC and the Mass Department of Health so that we protect each other. We're all in this together, and we really have to do what we can to protect each other until that happens.
And, Scott, what do you think is causing the spike in Saugus?
So I think this fluctuation, I think, every community has a unique setting. Saugus is uniquely settled with Route 1. In Saugus, which serves as a commercial base for other high-risk communities that are densely populated, cities around us such as, Revere, Malden, Lynn, Everett, Chelsea. So I think that they work here, they commute here. Saugus residents work here as well and live here. So I think that is obviously a contributor. Kids going back to college, I think it was mentioned by some of your other speakers. So that a lot of these colleges and universities are requiring testing prior to return. And I think, as everybody knows, as the science shows, that there's many people that have the virus and don't show symptoms. They're asymptomatic. So somebody gets a test and they're sort of surprised. And then it runs within that compromised house and you have other family members that test positive.
So let me ask you, Dr. Hirsch, listening to Scott here from Saugus, does that sound like a familiar set of themes? Do you feel like Worcester and Saugus are having a shared experience here, or do you feel like it's distinctive based on town or city characteristics?
I think there are some commonalities, definitely. I think the fatigue factor, like we mentioned, is probably something that everyone in the Commonwealth is experiencing, if not the nation. But I do think that we have a little different exposure rather than being exposed to some high-risk populations in the neighboring towns. Our towns are low-risk, so we have the high-risk populations kind of in our inner city, and they're comprising a lot of the essential workers. So they have been doing a wonderful job in helping keep our nursing homes going, our big box stores going, our factories going, but they don't have the right socioeconomic conditions to isolate well. They educate their kids and do daycare for their kids communally. They carpool. They do a lot of things that normally would be wonderful activities for everyone, but now in the day of COVID exposes a lot of people to exposure if somebody happens to be COVID positive. So I think these are probably shared experiences with Saugus too. I mean, like the mayor said, or the town manager said, I think we're all in this together.
Let's go to the phones here, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mike's on the line from Beverly. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is about, you know, should I be concerned about some of the private schools that I've seen in the high-risk communities around me that are going fully open while the public school in that same district is going to be virtual?
That's a great question, Mike. Scott, are there public private schools opening in person in Saugus?
For the most part, we do have a charter that's they're fully in school. Our public schools are fully remote. They actually had a 10-day delay in starting to try to do some training with the teachers. So they started actually Wednesday yesterday on fully remote, and there's not a plan to go back. I think they're going to revisit it in October.
How do you feel about the fact that private schools may be in person while public schools are not doing so out of concerns for safety?
I think they have to do what they feel comfortable with the guidelines. I mean, obviously, socioeconomic factors play in there, where a private school people are paying, and I think that the schools are probably got ahead of this a little bit. I think with the public schools, you're dealing with unions and negotiations on how to open and if they're safe and what the condition of the buildings are and their ventilation systems.
Dr. Duron, we have a Twitter question for you from at MMFarmD. It says, hi, at SI Duron. What do local schools, not colleges, use for testing? If suspected infection, are they referred to PCP? Any towns adopting their own testing a la Northeastern? PCP being, for listeners, a primary care physician. Dr. Duron.
Yeah, so great question, and hi to you. Schools, you know, for the most part, don't have testing programs set up. It is very important that schools be thinking about how they're going to make sure that symptomatic staff and students have access to tests in an expedient manner. In other words, you need to not be waiting 7 days for an appointment and then another 7 days for results, because in that time, you might not know that that student is positive and transmission is ongoing. Contact tracing doesn't occur until the test is positive, and there may be other positive students or faculty. So it is important that every school make sure that it knows where to refer its students and faculty when they're symptomatic. That's number one most important. You know, in terms of surveillance, asymptomatic testing of school children and teachers, there are some towns that are working on plans. There's a group of towns working together to pilot some testing, and that, you know, that can take any form. There's no right or wrong answers, but they are using the college testing plans as sort of a framework or a model. It's very expensive, and, you know, we're talking about, in some cases, public schools. So it's very logistically challenging.
I'd like to grab another call here, 800-423-8255. Beverly, you are on from Bolton. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, maybe I missed something with all this information that we've got about COVID, but are churches exempt from mask wearing? I ask because I drove past a church in West Boylston Sunday morning, and the whole congregation was outside, I mean really collectively outside gathering, and not one person had a mask on. There had to be over 100 people there. So I didn't know. I don't want to be in a communist state where you have to report people, but I certainly felt like I should have been able to tell somebody this. But honestly,
all right, well, let's talk to Dr. Michael Hirsch about that, Beverly, medical director for the city's Department of Public Health in Worcester. Dr. Hirsch.
Yeah, so there have been very strict guidelines that the governor's team from the Mass Department of Public Health has promoted about the number of people that can be in a place of worship indoors and outdoors. We had a very large mosque that was celebrating an Islamic holiday earlier in August where we had 300 people there, but they had to meet the distancing and the masking provisions in order for them to get their permit to do this. Indoors, I think the limitations had been 50 people. Now it's based on square footage, and I don't really have the formula on the top of my head, but I think that the only people that can be unmasked in the setting of a church would be a cluster of the family can sit together unmasked, but in general, the spacing has to be adequate, so at least 6 feet before another family can sit there. So I think that a citizen that is concerned like you are should definitely call their public health agent and let them know, because there are inspectors that can go and provide guidance. And if worse comes to worse, if it's a third or fourth offense, they might actually pass a citation along with a fine.
Let's turn to Scott Crabtree, town manager of Saugus, for a second. Scott, tomorrow at sundown, Rosh Hashanah begins. There will be other important holidays for various faith communities over the next several months. How are you talking to people about worshiping safely in Saugus?
So what we've done from the beginning is we have our public health director and our health department that's on an ongoing basis with communication to these different organizations, different religious organizations, as well as youth groups, and just trying to continue to educate them and to try to bring them, you know, the information they need and remind them of, you know, the guidelines and using the proper face coverings and everything else. And we haven't received many complaints in that fashion either.
Well, that's encouraging. Dr. Durone, I've got to imagine that any physician is experienced with trying to convince patients to comply with prescribed behavior, medication regimens, et cetera. So much of what we're hearing, both from Dr. Hirsch and from Scott Crabtree, really have to do with whether or not community members choose to comply. Are there public messages we could be using that we're not using effectively, or other techniques to increase people's willingness to I mean, it's hard and it's a long slog. How do we keep everyone together on this?
It is so hard, and you know, if the message "we're in this together" doesn't work, if the message "protect each other" doesn't work, because that's really what it's about. Mask wearing for the most part is about making sure that you contain your germs. There's also increasing evidence that mask wearing protects you. And I think it's not a bad time to start kind of disseminating that message as well, that, you know, even if it's a cloth mask, it is protecting you from inhaling some of those viral particles as well. And so we just really need everybody to do the right thing.
Dr. Hirsch, what would your message be to the Worcester community right now?
Well, I think I was tremendously, and I continue to be tremendously proud of the way we weathered the months of the pandemic leading up to now. I think when we've been doing our pop-up testing, our positivity rate, and the stop the spread efforts of wider testing of asymptomatic people have been less than 2%. So despite the numbers that have come out that suggest that we're in the red zone, I think people, by and large, have been very, very compliant and looking out for their neighbors. I would hope that they continue with that effort because really their individual health choices affect everybody else. So we've got to pull together.
And Scott Crabtree, in our last 30 seconds or so, a message from you to your community?
I think that the community and people that visit Saugus need to really follow the guidelines and wear, you know, have social distancing, wear face coverings, and protect each other. That's the only way we're going to get through this until a vaccine is here. The fact is the virus is the same as it was 6 months ago. Nothing's changed, and we need to understand that.
And that's Scott Crabtree, town manager of Saugus. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Michael Hirsch, medical director of the city's Department of Public Health in Worcester, thank you.
Thanks very much.
And Dr. Shira Durone, an infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Thanks, Dr. Durone.
Thank you.